Hello, this is Beyond the Bell with WASDA, Wisconsin's hub for professional development for anyone working in out-of-school time programs and youth-serving organizations. It's our mission to help you provide the highest quality care to children and their families. If you wish you had an extra tool going into programming to help guide behaviors in a productive way, wish you knew more about how to provide the whole family with support, or you want to enhance your own well-being, then this is the home for you. We know what it's like to feel like you never have enough time or resources to meet everyone's needs, and we're here to support you through the challenges. Stay tuned as we explore new ideas and strategies that you can use right away. I'm Rachel Sharon, health educator with Marshfield Clinic Systems Center for Community Health Advancement and Wisconsin Out of School Time Alliance. We're excited you're listening today to our conversation with Dr. Kelsey Offenwanger. Dr. Offenwanger is a clinical psychologist with Marshfield Health System, who's licensed in Illinois and Wisconsin. She works with families and caregivers of children and adolescents who experience behavioral difficulties, social-emotional challenges, and developmental concerns. Dr. Offenwanger participates in multidisciplinary teams across Marshfield Clinic Health System and provides evidence-based interventions to after-school program. She's joining us today to help us demystify mental health interventions and show us some related tools that we can all use. We often hear from caregivers and programs that they are supporting youth who could use the support of a mental health provider, like the ones that you deliver in clinic every day, but that the demand is so much greater than the number of providers available. So caregivers and staff in out-of-school time programs shoulder the weight of supporting youth until they can access helpful services, and they're often finding that we could use some extra emotional support ourselves. Can you tell us a little bit about the interventions that you use in your work?
Absolutely. So when I think about the interventions that I work with children, with adolescents and teens, they're tailored differently depending on the presenting concern or therapeutic goal. However, there's common themes to each one, and that often includes some of the great things that we've talked about today. The first thing that I often check in is about those positives or good things. It's so important to think about what's going well in our lives, and oftentimes that can be overshadowed by negative or, like I said, the presenting concerns that someone may be coming in with. So when checking in with positives, having caregivers or adults check in with positives too, it can really shift the mood and help for a more productive session. I also think about trying to engage with feeling identification and expression. Even though we may be a teenager or an adult may be coming in as a parent, it's pretty powerful to see how many people may struggle at times to talk about their feelings. We know as adults, it can be really tough to label what we're feeling, let alone it requires us to be vulnerable to talk about them. So trying to identify what level of comfort we are with that and just how much skills we have about talking with our feelings is usually my next step. So with that, for interventions, I typically use a feeling chart to check in about how we're feeling today. They can either verbally say it, pick one of the faces from the feeling chart, and then put that into an I feel sentence. So for example, it could be, I feel excited today. I feel nervous today. And then slowly building upon that. And the nice part about that activity is we're really owning our feelings. We're starting to know and express them, ideally to have that happen at home or with the other individuals in their lives. And we can come up with a plan for that feeling too. So for example, if it's, I'm feeling angry today, we can say, okay, what are maybe some of those reasons? I feel angry because dun, dun, dun. Being able to talk about the positives and some of those negative emotions can lead to better problem solving and coping with them. When we start to notice our feelings and behaviors, it's really important to start to identify patterns and come up with a plan. So one thing that I really like to talk about is having a feeling plan. What do we do with our feelings? You know, and so oftentimes the first step when we have a big emotion is to stop, breathe, and take a break. That can be so powerful in itself. Another repair that we tend to use when we think about relationships that may be challenging, if we hurt someone else's feelings, if we took something, if we had a certain behavior we didn't like, I call it making repairs. And that involves admitting, apologizing, and amending. We also try and kind of round out our sessions at the end to really ground us. And some nice grounding activities can include areas of mindfulness through breathing, shape breathing, belly breathing, coming up with your own breathing activity, or one that's pretty simple to implement at times is what we call 5-4-3-2-1. So it goes through each sense and it starts off with 5 things that you see, 4 things that you can feel, 3 things that you may be able to hear, 2 things that you can smell, and 1 thing that you tasted for the day. And those are some of the main interventions that I may use when working with children, teens, and adolescents.
Well, and what you're saying is we don't have to wait. We don't have to wait that month until the wait list is smaller. We don't have to wait that year until we can get somebody in. We can start to build some of these skills in the things that we do every day with kids and ourselves. These are skills that we can do or we can do with the kids, vice versa. So while there's absolutely no replacing therapy by any means for people that really need it, are there aspects of these interventions that everyone can learn and use on a daily basis?
There absolutely are. So I think of some of the examples I shared above can be used with adults too. I think one of the biggest things to really try and focus on, which is a little bit harder for kids, but we can get there, is trying to focus on what is in our control versus what's out of our control. Because oftentimes the things that we get worked up about, the things that we think are unfair or things that are really frustrating, are things that we can't control. And this doesn't mean that we just kind of throw up our hands in the air and say, oh, whatever, we can't change it, I'm done. But being able to say, okay, what can I actively do? Because when we have a sense of control over a situation, it reduces our levels of stress and anxiety and tends to improve our mental well-being because we have a plan. So having an action step moving forward can be so helpful. So I think about, again, using that feeling plan. How do we stop, breathe, take a break? When do we know that, hey, maybe these breaks aren't working? I'm feeling more stressed every day. How do we reach out to our support system? Can we build in those grounding activities in the car? Can we incorporate some of the breathing that we do? And I think you had a really good point. While there are really long wait lists, I wouldn't be surprised if certain youth are learning different skills within their school or after school setting that they may be able to transfer over to at home or use in other areas to help them get through their day.
So even though we can't engage in therapy ourselves, we can definitely build therapeutic or just supportive relationships that kind of is a step in the door, a step in the right direction. So I think a lot of people are familiar with this analogy of the oxygen mask. And anyone who's been on a plane knows, like, you have to put your own on first before you put someone else's, before you can save someone else. And I think we're at a point where people say, like, I get that, but what if there's not even oxygen coming in? So do you have any suggestions on, like, what are the things you recommend to caregivers to make sure we even have that, like, supply flowing in for ourselves so that we can use that oxygen mask before we're trying to help kids?
I think something for caregivers to really keep in mind, you know, is a mood check for ourselves, or, you know, that oxygen check. How are we doing? How are we doing today? You know, I think of, you know, asking yourself, what is our mood today for learning, for teaching, for listening? How are we doing? And if we can just ask ourselves that simple question throughout the day, throughout certain experiences, first, it helps us become more attuned to how we are feeling. How are we doing? And we know that our mindset and mood going into an activity can implement and affect the outcome. So I think about if someone's going into a test and they think they're going to do really poorly, oh, I'm going to fail it, da-da-da-da-da, I didn't study, they tend to do worse. However, on the flip side, if we tend to have a more positive mindset, especially within sports psychology, if we think we're going to make that putt, if we think we're going to make that basket, we think we're going to get that A, we tend to do better, which shouldn't make sense because it shouldn't be linked to just kind of that mindset, but it does. So what is our mood? You know, this is a great question to ask. It encourages self-management and awareness of our feelings. And it's really helpful in that immediate feedback loop. If we're feeling a little bit stressed, what can we do? Because if we go into that presentation stressed, we're likely going to maybe mess up, not do as well as we thought we could have. But if we go and say, okay, I'm stressed, I need to take a moment, let me have a sip of my coffee, let me, hey, chat with someone nearby so I don't keep focusing on something negative or a worry, we tend to feel better. So reflecting on our mood periodically increases our awareness of our emotions and needs. And when we kind of observe our mood for the day, we can help really gauge our well-being. And if we're tending to notice a worse mood over time, that could be a hint at how can we maybe incorporate some more self-care activities or more of those other subtle mindfulness interventions.
So once someone has taken the time to check in with themselves, what might be some cues that there's actually a low supply of oxygen versus a healthy supply of oxygen, and then what might somebody do to put more energy back in?
I think when we think about these oxygen levels, I think it's important to say, you know, how are we feeling and functioning? So when we think about lower oxygen, just in reality, we're likely going to feel more fatigued. We're likely going to feel more tired. And ideally that leads to burnout, which can be really challenging to then kind of refill. So I think about, you know, what are ways to kind of spend our energy and mental resources efficiently? What do we need to stay alive? You know, we need oxygen, we need fresh air, we need sleep, we need food. So how do we fuel our bodies and fuel our mind in the best way? And that's not just from the basics, but it's also from things that we can do mentally. So how do we work best to work with our brain, to guess in advance of how we could act in a situation? How do we prepare for what's going to take place? If we know we're going to have a stressful couple of days, how do we maybe build in snacks? Do we build in some more self-care time? Do we plan a call with a friend in between? So I think it's really important to notice our feelings from within our body to help our brain really monitor how well we're predicting to function, but then also different tools that we can use to prepare for more stressful days, to make sure we have excess oxygen if needed, or if we're feeling pretty well, how do we maintain that? So I think it's how do we kind of spend our energy and resources efficiently from within and try and tailor that as needed.
Yeah, so once we do that check-in, it gives us cues on what we need to do to take care of ourselves. And sometimes the intervention is just getting a drink of water. Like you said, sometimes it's really simple. And how many times do we build that into plans of the kids that we're working with and we forget that those are the things that we also need? So I think the question kind of is answered in and of itself, and I think I know what you're going to say, but do you think it's possible for adults to then pass these skills to youth, and how would you build a therapeutic or a supportive relationship with kids while staying in your lane and not actually trying to go into the therapist lane?
You know, I think it's definitely possible. Adults are youth's first teachers. So think about little kids. They look up to adults. They model what they do. They can be mini versions of us in that sense. However, what we need to do is we need to first listen. And when I say listen, we need to actively listen. And what that means is that we are present in the moment. We're not thinking of other things that are going on. We're not trying to problem solve. We're not trying to solve their challenges, question why they're feeling a certain way. We're just being there. And I think that's a really big thing that we all can do is listen, but actively listen. And when youth feel like they're being listened to and not judged, they're more likely to open up. They're more likely to share more information and build that sense of trust. So we hope too that by actively listening, the youth in our lives will mirror that to actively listen to others. And that's something that anyone could do at any time.
So if you want to help out a kid in your life, just listen. Thanks for being here today, Dr. L.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening in. We hope you leave today with a few more tools in your toolbox. Be sure to visit our website and sign up for our emails where we share information about all of our upcoming professional development opportunities.